This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. According to polls, Ohio's first congressional district is a tight, hotly contested race between incumbent Republican Steve Chabot and Democratic challenger Kate Schroeder. We've invited both candidates on this program to join us. We did not hear back from the Chabot campaign, but we did hear back from Democrat Kate Schroeder. I spoke with her earlier. Here's our conversation. Kate Schroeder, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of things have changed since we spoke ahead of the primary earlier this year. It feels like that was years ago, although I suppose it was just months ago. Not the least of which has been this devastating pandemic, and I want to talk specifically about that immediately because of what's been going on with the president. And I'm wondering what your view is of the president's experience with COVID-19 and how that reflects his administration's response to this pandemic in the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. My hope was, I was very saddened to hear the president had this, and I'm grateful to hear he's recovering. But, my hope would be that it would help him take it more seriously, have empathy for those, and really also, understand the risks around this and the importance of wearing masks and social distancing or physical distancing. And, maybe he will get there. We shall see. I am an optimist at heart. But as someone who has spent my career in public health, like, it is really concerning to me how this is being mismanaged in our country. We, as I'm sure you know, Michael, the U.S. is less than 5% of the world's population, but we have about 20% of the world's deaths due to COVID. And it's because we haven't had a strong response and a strong leadership at the federal level on this, really investing in testing, empowering the public health experts to give consistent guidance about how we should be responding to this. And we've lost 210,000 people. Like, those are lives, those are grandparents and aunts and uncles and sisters and friends. I mean, it's devastating. I have a friend who lost both his parents to COVID, and it's heartbreaking. We need leadership. And we are where we are at this moment, but there's no time like today to start taking it more seriously and really investing in testing and the PPE that we need, giving relief to the families through extended unemployment, extending PPP, supporting our schools. I've got, my kids are kindergarten and second grade, and they're in CPS. And it makes me really worried and concerned about the disparities here. Because we have a situation where Cincinnati public schools have been all virtual, which, I can speak from personal experience. It's so hard, especially with a kindergartner and the youngest kids. And most of our private schools, most of our wealthy suburban schools are open in person. And our public schools also need the resources to be able to open safely, and our, local and state governments. And so I really think we need, it's part of why I'm running. We need leaders that are there, that are fighting and getting through this next relief package. It is so desperately needed. People are suffering right now.
I want to talk about that relief package, Kate, because, we haven't had any significant legislation adopted at the federal level since the CARES Act very early in this pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we appear to be in a typical gridlock in Washington right now over something as what, many of us would think would be simple. How do you help the people who are struggling with this? And I'm wondering what your position would be as it relates to Democratic leadership in the House in reaching an agreement of some sorts to ensure that there is additional relief coming to families who have been hit economically by this health crisis.
Yeah. And for me, one of the things that I think we need to do a better job of is there's a lot of rhetoric around, you're either for public health or you're for the economy. And to me, as someone, with a business background who's worked in healthcare my whole life, like, these are interrelated, right? The stronger your public health response, the sooner and more safely you can reopen the economy. And we need, leaders that acknowledge that these are interrelated, and we have to both simultaneously be strengthening our public health response and investing in the economy. And I do think we need, on both sides, we need Democrats and Republicans to come together and pass the next relief package, because people are suffering. We've had, and we're seeing other evidence of that, like the mental health issues that are coming up. We've had almost as many deaths due to gun violence during this time as we have due to COVID. And part of that is just because people don't have jobs. They don't have, really do need to get that next relief package through. And it does need to include, extended unemployment and extension of PPP the PPP program for small businesses and support to state and local governments. Like, we have, you know, a situation in Cincinnati where the tax revenues are down about 40%. And that's going to impact, you know, our government's ability to function. And we really need our leadership, you know, to, in Congress, to stop playing politics, to come together and pass something.
We're talking with Kate Schroeder, Democratic nominee for Congress in Ohio's 1st Congressional District. She faces incumbent Republican Congressman Steve Chabot. Well, let's talk about Congressman Chabot. We were unable to book him for our program today. I do understand that you're to face off in some sort of forum or debate this week.
Yes, we have a couple debates. The first one is tomorrow, Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. on Channel 12, and we'll also be streaming live.
And the Inquirer is hosting one as well.
Yeah. The Inquirer is hosting one on Thursday at noon, which will also be streamed live.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on how that's going. But this race is apparently tight. And I know this is probably an easy question to ask a candidate who's challenging an incumbent, but why is this race tight?
It's tight because people want change. You know, I'm running against someone who's been in for 24 years, who focuses on dividing us and divisiveness and votes 95% of the time with Trump. You know, we are at a time when we have so many real and pressing problems. And whether you're talking about the economy, the pandemic, racial injustices, and we need leaders to bring us together and get things done. And, you know, I'm a low ego mom. I know how to de-escalate. I do it every day with my 5 and 7 year old. And that's the attitude that I want to bring to Congress. And I'm a public health leader. You know, I have a Wharton MBA. I've spent 15 years bringing business skills to solve public health challenges and have a track record of results, expanding services and reducing drug prices. And I think people want that. People are looking for change. They're looking for people that really, instead of pulling us apart, focus on solving problems and bringing us together. And not, you know, I'm not an ideologue. I'm someone who's just a problem solver. I can work with anyone. I'm really committed to working with people across the aisle. And I do think that's why it's tight. You know, this district is gerrymandered. It is drawn to be 5 points Republican. It includes central and western Hamilton County and then all of Warren County. And, you know, Chabot's been in for 24 years. But I do think, you know, what we are seeing is that people want leaders that are focused on helping this community, that are focused not on playing politics, but on putting people first and solving problems. And we're currently tied in the polls. The latest poll had us up a couple points, but within the margin. And it's encouraging. You know, I find that when I'm talking to voters, like, what they want is somebody who is there on the issues, not beholden to special interests. I'm not taking corporate PAC money. You know, this is about a movement of people, you know, and saying that we need different kind of leadership.
Well, Steve Chabot is hitting you for your position with the Cincinnati Board of Health. You've served as finance chair, and one of his campaign ads suggests that you, Kate Schroeder, ran up a $2.7 million deficit there and embroiled that board in legal issues and scandals. And here we are in the middle of a health crisis that the entire world is facing. And it appears that these ads are trying to cast doubts on your ability to lead even a local health issue. What is your response to those ads he's put out?
Yeah, I suppose anyone who's lived in this district for a while knows this is straight out of Steve Chabot's playbook, is, you know, these very inflammatory, misleading, you know, statements, lies. Like the health department, so I am one of 9 members on a volunteer board of health. And the health department's never had a deficit. It is not allowed to by law. It's part of the city, you know, has a balanced budget amendment. Chabot knows this, right? He was a council member years ago, but he has no qualms about putting these lies out. The $2.7 million was actually from the finance department did an estimate of what losses would be like due to COVID. It was a projection of potential losses. Because some of the school-based health centers were closed. But of course, those losses were offset by reduced expenses and also additional COVID relief that came in. So there's never been a deficit, and it's, you know, just patently false. And as an individual who expects this kind of thing against someone as partisan as Chabot, you're not surprised by it, but it's still disappointing, especially during a pandemic when all of our effort needs to be coming together and fighting this. And here we've got a member of Congress who's spending his time, you know, spreading lies instead of working on the issues that, you know, will help people.
We're talking with Kate Schroeder, Democratic nominee for Congress in Ohio's 1st Congressional District. She faces Republican incumbent Steve Chabot. Let's talk about some broader issues that have emerged recently. I know the House of Representatives plays little to no role in approving a Supreme Court justice. But I'm curious about your thoughts about what's happening in Washington now. It looks like some hearings are going to start just next week with people already voting, with some Senate Republicans, I guess, flip-flopping on their position from back in 2016 when they denied President Obama the opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court justice. They're moving forward, trying to fill the seat left open by the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. First of all, what's your thoughts on this whole thing? Do you think that they should be waiting?
I do think they should be waiting. I mean, it's frustrating to me that here we have a bunch of politicians that can't come together and don't seem to have the energy or the time in the Senate to focus on getting another relief package through. And yet they're more than willing to play political games and ram through a new justice appointment during a time when there is so much need on other areas. And as someone who, you know, I'm most worried about the impact if this does go through and filling the appointment in this rushed way, about the impact on healthcare and coverage for pre-existing conditions. I think you may know this, Michael, I'm 43 now. 10 years ago, I went through Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I had a day that so many people have, you know, where your whole life changes in one day and it's an incredibly vulnerable feeling. Your survival is dependent on access to healthcare. And if this appointment goes through in this rushed way, like, there is a very real chance that we will lose coverage for pre-existing conditions because the court is set to hear a case on the Affordable Care Act and coverage for pre-existing conditions in mid-November. And as someone who lives with a pre-existing condition, you know, I'm one of over 300,000 in this district that live with a pre-existing condition. And it's really personal. And it, you know, we are in the middle of a pandemic and we are rushing this through and risking our coverage for pre-existing conditions. Like, it's really upsetting. And I don't even have words for how concerning it is. It's incredibly concerning.
What we saw from the Supreme Court's early, I guess, decisions that have come out so far this week as they begin their new term, that it's got some concerns for gay people in our community, across the country, yeah, really, with some concerning words from two of the justices who suggested maybe it's time to revisit the Obergefell decision, that the nationwide legalization of gay marriage. So there's even more of an emphasis on how important the Supreme Court could be for those who have progressive politics. I'm wondering if you would be supportive if the Democrats were able to take the White House, the Senate, and keep the majority in the House. Would you support some punitive measures against Republicans? Would you be supportive of adding Supreme Court justices, of other things I've heard, like admitting D.C. and Puerto Rico to statehood so that you would guarantee more than likely more Democratic senators?
Yeah, I mean, one thing at a time. I think you got to wait to see, you know, how things play out here. My focus really is, and I really think we should be waiting on filling this this justice appointment. I think that was a precedent that was set earlier. And when it was, you know, more than 10 months out from the election, here we are. The election's already started.
I think it's clear they're not going to be waiting, though. I think it's clear that Mitch McConnell is going to get what he wants here. And what he wants is another Supreme Court justice. So he doesn't care what you think. He doesn't care what any Democrat thinks. He's going to push through this. So are you, if you're in office as a member of Congress next year and the leadership roles are reversed, are you going to be supportive of, I guess, sticking it to them?
We'll see. I mean, what I can say is that I will stand up for this community. Like, every vote that I take is going to be, you know, it's going to be based on what do I think is in the best interest of this community. And it's, you know, I do support things like term limits on Supreme Court justices. I think that's something we should really look at, because one of the challenges we have now is that because they're lifetime appointments, the ramifications of these decisions go on for decades and decades. And, you know, all I can say is that I would really, I'm not going there. I'm not going to be beholden to anybody. You know, I had a job that I loved. I'm happy to go back to my job in global health, but I am going there to stand up and do, make my best decisions on behalf of this community for what I think is best for our democracy and for people in this community.
And we're talking to Kate Schroeder, Democratic nominee in Ohio's first congressional district, a seat that is currently held by Republican incumbent Steve Chabot. Earlier in our conversation, Kate, you mentioned that this is a gerrymandered district, that it has a portion of Hamilton County and then all of Warren County, a very strangely drawn district. I think we're at that point in the calendar where districts could change. What do you think this district should look like?
Yeah, so I'm proud of Ohio. We passed a ballot measure back in 2018 to address the gerrymandering. And that should take effect in 2022. Now we shall see, you know, we have a Republican state house and they will do, you know, their best to postpone this. But one of the provisions in that was that counties like Hamilton County that are bigger than a congressional district, a congressional district's around 730,000 people. And if a county is bigger than that, then at least one county should be the whole congressional district. So I imagine, and again, this is going to have to come. There is a process for how the districts are redrawn, but Hamilton County should be its own congressional district in the next iteration after this census and by 2022. And I think that would be much more fair. I mean, the way it's drawn now, you know, anyone can go to our website, kforcongress.com. We have voter info on there and a picture of the district. It looks bizarre. I have a necklace that has a shape on it. I mean, gerrymandering is essentially where you have politicians picking their voters instead of, you know, voters picking their politician, and as it should be. And we have, you know, it's no secret that, you know, the African-American community was just really split down the middle in this between the first and second congressional district. We're about 44%, African-American community is about 44% in Hamilton County, in the city of Cincinnati. And it's just cut right down the middle to split that up, to decrease their power. And it's not okay. I mean, voting rights, there are so many efforts to, you know, suppress voting rights that we're seeing now. And it's really concerning to me. It's one of my priorities in getting there is, you know, passing the John Lewis Voting Rights Act to really address some of these issues, because it's concerning. You know, our democracy is a huge part of who we are. I lived in Zambia in Southern Africa for 2 years back in 2007 to 2009. So I was there when Obama was elected. And the questions that I would get from my friends over there from Zambians would be like, what does it mean to you to live in a democracy, to be able to vote for someone and believe that your vote is counted and find out the results on the same day? You know, there were so many other nations that looked up to us because of, you know, this shining example that's been our democracy. And it, you know, that's waning. We're losing that. And so it's a huge part of what motivates me to run is to, you know, be in the arena and help address this, because, you know, we're in the grand scheme of things, we're a relatively young democracy in this country. And I really believe that if we don't send better people to Washington, we are at risk of losing what's so great about our country.
Well, let's talk about what's great and perhaps not great about our country in the context of what we've learned about America during this pandemic and the way that we've responded to it and the longstanding underlying issues, whether it's a national reckoning on race or a look at the economics of various communities, student loans, access to healthcare. What do you think you've learned about America over the past 8 or 9 months that we've been dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, I'm heartbroken by some of what's happened, but I'm also really motivated by what's happened in this pandemic and in this year. And just to start with some of the racial injustices that, you know, have perpetuated in this community for, and in this country for hundreds of years, but they've been laid bare this year. And with the killing of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and so many others, I think we are at a moment of national reckoning. And more people not being able to look away. Like, for so long, I do think we've looked away. And I'm a data person. I mean, first, like, my lived experience as a white person, like, I have privilege. You know, my life is so much easier because of the color of my skin. And we need to acknowledge that. And that it's, like, that's not okay in our country. And we've got to take steps to address that. And for me, it's not just about in our criminal justice system. I see it in healthcare. In this very district, there is a difference of up to 25 years in average lifespan, depending on what zip code you're born in this district. We have huge disparities in our graduation rates, our literacy rates, and our employment rates and our pay. And, you know, those are issues that I think we need leaders that are committed to making policy decisions that actively reduce those disparities. And it's a lens and something that I will look at. And so I do think that's been, while it's been heartbreaking what's happened this year into the videos, you know, it is, you can't unwatch those. But I'm grateful for it. You know, it's called us to the table to really wrestle with it seriously and more in a more public way than I think we have. And then with the pandemic, again, it's really laid bare the weaknesses in our public health system, the need for more mental health. I mean, the numbers of people that are suffering from mental illness right now are at record levels. And we're also seeing the lack of strong public health and primary care. That is why we have so much higher rates of this disease in a lot of our most vulnerable communities, marginalized communities. And as someone who served on the Board of Health and really believes in our public health clinics and that we have got to move towards universal access to healthcare, you know, the pandemic has laid that bare because none of us in a situation of a pandemic, none of us are safe until all of us are safe, right? Our health is interrelated. And so it's so important that we have leaders that are responsible, right? That look at the data and roll up their sleeves and work to solve these problems instead of using it to play politics and use inflammatory language. I mean, it's funny, as a candidate for office, you're supposed to say, you know, I get a lot of advice to say these, you know, strongly worded things but the reality is that I'm somebody that wants to solve problems. And I find that we bring more people to the table and can get things done when we talk directly and clearly and honestly about what the problems are and how we can solve them without using inflammatory language and rhetoric.
Kate Schroeder is the Democratic nominee in Ohio's 1st congressional district. She faces incumbent Republican Steve Chabot in this year's election. I want to note that we did invite Steve Chabot to join us on this program, and his campaign did not respond to our invitations, though they will be debating this week at Local 12 WKRC and at The Enquirer, so we'll keep an eye out for that. Kate Schroeder, thank you so much for the time you gave us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. If anybody wants to learn more, they can read about me at kateforcongress.com.
And we're going to discuss this campaign next with WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. You are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Let's break down that closely watched race between incumbent Congressman Steve Chabot and Democratic challenger Kate Schroeder here in Ohio House District 1 with WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson, who joins us on Zoom. Howard, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
So Steve Chabot, this is his 15th run for this seat. He has lost twice. He lost his first try back in 1988 to incumbent Tom Lucan before winning for the first time in 1994. People might remember that 94 was a big wave year for Republicans. And then he lost to Steve Driehaus in 2008, then came back in another Republican wave year in 2010 and has been there ever since. How is 2020 shaping up as it relates to waves and Steve Chabot's electoral prospects?
Well, you mentioned the wave in 2010 that brought him back. There was a pretty good wave in 2008 that took him out. And it was the Obama wave. And he was a victim of that. And this year, if there is another wave election, and it may be with women voters, particularly in Ohio, in a lot of suburban areas, then he's in trouble. And I think he understands, you know, Steve Chabot's smart enough to know that 2 years from now, this district is going to look very different. It's not going to be this kind of gerrymandered thing that was made for him specifically and to keep him in office. It's going to be a very blue district. And that's going to be a challenge for him. And I think, you know, this may be his last hurrah.
Democrats targeted this seat pretty hard in 2018. They put up Aftab Purival, Hamilton County Clerk of Courts. And Aftab lost, of course, to Steve Chabot by 4 percentage points. In the few cycles leading up to that one, though, there wasn't some serious competition from the Democrats to Steve Chabot. I look over the years here, over the past couple of decades, three decades, really, that Steve Chabot has won this seat. He's beat David Mann, Roxanne Qualls, John Cranley, twice. So he has beat newcomers and he has beat well-established politicians here in our community. Kate Schroeder was not very well known, perhaps, in a broad sense before this election. And here she is, according to all the polls, running neck and neck with this veteran Republican politician here. What gives for her specifically?
You know, that's a real interesting question because she had the guts to actually run. There are a whole lot of better known Democrats out there who wanted to run, who thought about running, but who never could make the decision, and they didn't do it. Kate Schroeder did. It was a good time for her to do it in a year when I really believe that particularly women voters, suburban women voters, are going to make or break a lot of elections from the presidency on down. And she took a chance when others would not, others who were better known and better funded.
Howard, I know we've talked about this district as it relates to gerrymandering before, and Kate Schroeder in our conversation moments ago also referenced its gerrymandered nature. It does look strange. It has obviously densely populated parts of Cincinnati and Hamilton County, and then includes all of Warren County, which was apparently designed to ensure Republican success for that seat.
Yes.
This is a pretty important year because it's a census year, and it's not long after census years that these things are redrawn. Is there any impact that the winners in this election cycle will have in shaping what this district might look like in the future?
I don't know that they're going to have the winners are going to have that much to say about it. I mean, we have a new system in Ohio that is supposed to work and supposed to take a lot of the partisan politics out of this process. We'll see if that actually takes place. But I think the one thing that will happen with the first congressional district is that Warren County will not be part of it. Warren County, which has been traditionally a very, very Republican area, is not going to be part of this district anymore. It will be a Hamilton County district with maybe a little tiny slice of Butler County like it used to have. But it'll be principally Hamilton County. And Hamilton County, as we know now, through the last several election cycles, is a blue county. There's no question about it.
So a Republican incumbent, even like Steve Chabot, if he were to pull through this year, would probably have significantly harder path forward in 2022.
Yes, and he knows that. He's actually even talked about it.
Well, what is that? I know we're talking about Ohio District 1, but since we're talking about, you know, the possible shifting of the districts, mm-hmm. Ohio District 2 is another one that includes part of Hamilton County and Cincinnati in the eastern side, and then goes all the way out to some of the rural eastern counties. Is that one that you envision changing up to?
It's going to change around the edges. It's very difficult. It's probably going to still remain a pretty good Republican district because you can't get around Claremont County. Claremont County is this big blob that of Republican votes that has stymied some very good Democratic candidates and some not so good Democratic candidates. They happen to have a good candidate this year in Jamie Castle, but Claremont County is a real challenge for any Democrat, and you can't get around it. You can't get past that. And I don't know how they could conceivably make a district that would be any more friendly to Democrats.
And we will be talking to Jamie Castle, the Democratic nominee for Congress in Ohio, too, on Thursday, along with incumbent Republican Congressman Brad Winstrup. That's coming up on Thursday this week. But back to Ohio District 1. I'm Michael Monks, talking with WVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson here on Cincinnati Edition. You know, we're in the home stretch now, and there's just so much happening in this country. We're dealing with this pandemic, and I think, I mean, just through anecdotal observation, sure, people are exhausted of this thing. They want it to be over, but then the president got it. And his handling of it was Trumpian, of course, in nature. And I don't think anyone is surprised by that necessarily. But how is this going to play down ticket in races like this? If there was anyone waffling, anyone on the fence about the makeup they'd like to see in the next Congress, is this COVID-19 pandemic, is this the top issue?
I think so. I really do. I can't imagine that there's anything else that's going to outpace this thing in terms of the voter impact on voters. It's impacting everyone. I mean, everyone and almost every family now has somebody, a friend, a family member, somebody who is either had COVID-19 or even passed away from COVID-19. It's as Kate Schroeder pointed out quite rightly, you know, we have 5% of the world's population and 20% of the world's deaths. And there's no way around that. There's got to be a reckoning for that. And I think it's going to be in this election.
But with the president tweeting yesterday that he was leaving Walter Reed and that he was feeling really good, and he said, quote, "Don't be afraid of COVID. Don't let it dominate your life. We have developed under the Trump administration some really great drugs and knowledge. I feel better than I did 20 years ago." It plays into the way that he's sort of played this down since the beginning, and now he's actually had it, and he's playing it even further down. I'm wondering, who does this impact in the electorate?
I don't think it impacts people who have already made up their minds in that race. I think the presidential race, divisions are very, very solid. You know, he can say that about COVID-19 and, you know, you shouldn't be afraid of it, shouldn't worry about it. But the healthcare experts were just furious over some of his statements. And the polls show that people tend to believe the healthcare experts, the Dr. Fauci's and the others, over what they are hearing out of the White House, that the message from the White House is not being accepted by the majority of Americans.
Well, I'm curious because Joe Biden has really flipped the script as it relates to older voters when compared to 2016. I had seen some recent analysis that while the race is tightening in Ohio between Biden and Trump, that nationwide trend of older voters going towards Biden is not happening in Ohio. And I'm wondering if a higher level display of downplaying the threat of this virus by the president might hurt him in that demo.
Yes, I think it will. I mean, sooner or later, it just dawns on people of that demographic that, hey, wait a minute. You're talking about me. You're talking about my family. You're talking about my wife or my husband or my siblings. And that gets very personal, and people are not going to accept any very optimistic points of view on that until they see better evidence, real evidence.
We'll have to see how that plays in the down ballot races like Ohio Congressional District 1 between Democrat Kate Schroeder and incumbent Republican Steve Chabot. We have Howard Wilkinson with us again tomorrow to analyze the Hamilton County prosecutor's race. We'll have interviews with both Fanon Rucker, the Democrat, and incumbent Republican Joe Dieters. And as I said previously, on Thursday, we'll talk with the congressional candidates in Ohio District 2, incumbent Republican Brad Winstrup and Democrat Jamie Castle. Howard, looking forward to spending more days ahead with you. And thanks for being with us today.
Great. Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.